and she told us about DBC, a milestone of quality and sound broadcasting, promoting Ghanaian heritage and aspirations in a changing world. Right after that, we listened to the majority leader in Parliament, Honorable Alban Bagbin, and he spoke about public service broadcasting at the crossroads. And then not too long ago, we had the Director General of the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation himself, Major Albert Donchebe, tell us about public service broadcasting, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I've already told you that today we'll listen to the final lecture, which will be delivered by Ambassador Cabral Blay Amihi on the topic, broadcasting, a vital tool for national cohesion. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much and welcome. Now, before we start the program, let's invite the presence of God. And we will invite Pastor Ebenezer Bochi, who is the Deputy Director of Finance of the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, to give us the opening prayer. Thank you very much.
Please follow protocol. Shall we please bow our heads for a word of prayer? Heavenly Father, we are so grateful unto you for this loving day. Indeed, your unfailing faithfulness is still keeping us for 80 years and beyond. We wish we could have a better word than thank you, Lord, to sing it throughout the days of our lives. Yet we are once again very grateful for this so-called lecture, which happens to be the sixth and the last lecture of this anniversary. Father, we dedicate this lecture unto you and pray for your direction and vision. We commit to God, a honorable speaker, into your hands, and everybody on program, Lord. We pray the reason for which this lecture, Lord, has been put up will be accomplished before we leave here, in Jesus' mighty name. Father, once again, we lift up GBC into your hands, Lord. You have brought us far to know that we cannot do anything with our own strength. We therefore ask, Lord, for your help. We ask, Lord, for your blessings for the days ahead. Father, re-energize, God, the workers. And my Lord, we also pray that you bring us divine strength and vision for the days ahead. We want to remember all retired staff of GBC, Lord. Father, Ghana is your nation. We want to lift up, oh God, the leadership of this nation into your hands. Lord, help them and make them successful in whatever they plan, oh God, and whatever leadings you give to them. Heavenly Father, we cannot live here without being grateful, Lord, to all our valued and cherished, God, viewers and listeners. We leave them before you, Lord. Bless them as well. We ask that your grace go before us for a successful program and for a successful year, for a successful anniversary. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Thank you very much. And if you feel the presence of God in this ceremony like I do, let's give him a bigger round of applause. Thank you very much, Pastor Ebenezer Bochi, for the opening prayer. And after this, in our Ghanaian tradition, even when you receive visitors and you know why they have come, you still say, why have you come? And then you welcome them by giving them a glass of water, or in some cases, or in many cases rather, a calabash of water or palm wine. Let's welcome our own board chairman, Mr. Kwame Richard Asante, to give us his opening remarks, because he is the chairman for this occasion as well. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Good afternoon to you all. Our esteemed guest speaker, members of the National Media Commission, members, past members of the Media Commission, fellow board members of GBC, past board members, management and staff of GBC, our media partners. Ken, you have always been part of us. Ambassador Deborah, you have always been with us. Dr. Ifod, you have always been with us. Kintiman, and all of you good people who have always been with us. Our cherished viewers and discerning listeners, ladies and gentlemen, and all protocols observed. It is my special honor to welcome you once again to GBC, as I've done over the past 5 months, to listen to another distinguished Ghanaian to share his thoughts and opinions about the subject which is very dear to all of us in this studio and many others listening or watching the program in Ghana and beyond. To go back to history, in 1968, the NLC D226 set up GBC as a corporation with a mandate to inform, educate, and entertain, as well as engage in some commercial broadcasting. You would appreciate that GBC was founded in the era when it was the responsibility of the government to set up and run a media establishment as an essential tool for national development and national cohesion. GBC, from that day on, has lived through many challenging times, some of which have threatened its very existence. But thankfully, and through the goodwill of Ghanaians, GBC is celebrating 80 years of total existence. It has gone through what has been described earlier on by our Director General, the ugly, the bad, and now it's positioning itself into the good phase. And we hope to remain in the good phase. Ladies and gentlemen, for many in this country, as you agree with me, especially those in the remote parts of Ghana, GBC has been and continues to be the lifeline to the outside world. And to many, this access to information that GBC provides is a crucial means of empowerment, education, and political awareness. And this matters enormously to them. As a public service broadcaster, GBC has and also continues to play a pioneering and leading role in seeking and implementing new ideas and technologies. It is for this reason that GBC has taken the lead in the national digital migration process, telecasting both analog and digital broadcasting since 2011, such that residents of Accra enjoy the benefits of digital broadcasting. The rest of the country waits because the national digital platform is yet to be built. In this area, GBC is heavily involved too. Our priority, because of its public service broadcaster role, has been involved in bringing education, information, and entertainment to the doorsteps of the public in a language they can understand and relate to within the social and cultural context. This explains our morning breakfast shows in 6 local languages: Akan, Nzima, Ewe, Dagbani, Ga, and Hausa. Our Sunday afternoon and various other side dramas are also in different local languages. GBC plays the lead in the nation's public affairs and educational programs. Our radio and TV documentaries are tailored to provide some social benefits. That's why some stations continue to broadcast foreign programs on other cultures. GBC has promoted programs that inform on Ghana's history, culture, festivals, and our own heritage. A critical role that GBC plays nationally is to serve as the most important avenue of national information and celebration of our collective national identities through the live public coverage of national committees and commissions, bringing information to the public in a way that no other TV station does in the country. Through live coverage of national events such as the Independence Day celebration, the nation's identity and culture are celebrated and cemented. You are aware and witnesses of 8 months that we spent covering the Supreme Court hearings and the tremendous effect it has had on our politics in this country and the peace that we so enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, GBC has done this by launching 6 channels to cater for the dynamic interests of the general public. The GTV Omnibus, GTV Governance Channels will be used diligently to carry out our public service mandate. GTV Live Channel for religion and cultural issues. GTV Sports Plus, a dedicated sports channel. GBC 24, our viewers access to 24 hours of news and current affairs, discussions, reviews, presentations, and talk shows, among other things. Ubuntu TV, the Ga Dangwe channel, the first of our regional channels. I wish to assure you that we are not only in Accra, but GBC is also in the process of establishing the other 9 regional TV stations across the country to produce regional-based programs. And as I've indicated, Ubuntu is the first of such stations currently transmitting. We have greatly facilitated the growth of private broadcasting stations. Indeed, most of the new stations, which have become the moguls of our time, have been supported and groomed into existence by GBC. In fact, GBC owns shares in 2 of these companies. GBC also hosts more than 15 private broadcasting stations on our platforms. Additionally, we also host a number of private broadcasters within the GBC compound. We have given them space, to do their work. One can say that GBC is a true grandfather of broadcasting, and we'll continue to do that. We have trained a sizable number of the best broadcasters in this business. Our training schools and courses are still the most sought after by students of broadcasting. And that's the reason why we are turning our training schools into a fully fledged, tertiary institution. Again, to go back to history, GBC was the only radio and TV station in times past. At 80 years old, there are about 400 radio stations and over 40 TV stations. The competition has become fierce. GBC needs to upgrade its equipment and stay modern. We cannot continue to do business as usual. We are also fully aware that it is the right of Ghanaians to have a truly independent public service broadcaster, but it costs money to be relevant, and all of us must look for resources to invest in GBC and to do this kind of work. You will agree with me that one of the most critical things to guarantee our relevance is the revision and the resumption of the collection of the TV license fee, which has now been achieved thanks to our honorable members of parliament and all those who helped in this process. Even though it has taken more than 20 years to get the fee revised, we are happy that it has materialized at this critical stage of our existence. Public service broadcasting in most parts of the world is funded by the taxpayer through the TV license. That is why the likes of BBC, Deutsche Welle, and SABC are such global giants in broadcasting. They are empowered by the people to provide them the kind of quality programming we see on their airwaves. Ladies and gentlemen, GBC can do the same with the necessary and the appropriate and right funding. I will therefore appeal to all to our good citizens to take up their civic responsibility of paying the TV license fee and to enable GBC to carry out its mandate effectively. We are supplemented by government to some extent, but it's only to cover, you know, salaries. Capital and other operational expenditures, you know, are funded through internally generated funds. We believe that the resumption of the TV license fee is to ensure that GBC could devote more time to effective and efficient public service broadcasting. And as we all know, providing public service broadcasting is very expensive. Distinguished viewers and listeners, we have an eminent speaker to talk to us, and I don't want to get into his business. But for the past 5 months, as we've been told, we've been privileged to host a succession of special Ghanaians, beginning with the Honorable Minority Leader, Honorable Che Mensa Bonsu, MP, Professor Stephen Adai, former Rector of GIMPA, Reverend Dr. Joyce Ayi, former CEO of the Chamber of Mines, Honorable Aban Sumani Bagbin, Majority Leader, Major Albert John Chebi, retired, the DG of the GBC, to this evening's distinguished speaker who will take the podium in the next few minutes. Our topic for today is broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. I believe that this topic sums up the issues that the lecture series was set up to explore with a view to throwing more light on the way forward for GBC. We thank all those who have been a part of this process, and we hope that they will continue to be with GBC and help GBC to grow. Let me at this juncture, and with a round of applause, invite Ambassador Kabra Liami here to present his lecture.
A big round of applause for our chairman, Mr. Richard Kwame Asante, the indefatigable chairman of the GBC board. And now that he has opened the lecture for us, it's about time now for me to also introduce some of the people who are here present with us before we formally welcome all of you here. And I mention these names not in any particular order, and if I happen to miss your name, it's just that when you are up here, you happen to see a lot of faces, but no particular face and in that matter. So please do forgive me if I happen to leave out your name on this list. But with us here, we have Ambassador Deborah. Ambassador Deborah, can we see you by hand? Thank you very much, sir. He has always been with us from the beginning of these lectures, and we are very grateful for that, sir. Thank you so very much. We also have Madame Vida Crantin Asante, past broadcaster. She's here with us. Thank you very much. She's a special guest of Director of Corporate Affairs, I understand. Thank you very much, ma'am, for coming. Madame Cornelia Amwa, another past broadcaster, is here with us. Thank you. I'm sure you are very familiar with those names and those faces. I've seen my very own mentor, Mr. Robert Owusu, who is also here with us, another past broadcaster. Thank you very much, Uncle Robert. Because of you, I now know the difference between journalism and journalism. I know it's not the same. Thank you. We have with us Mr. Ken Ashibe. He's the Managing Director of the Graphic Communications Group. He's right here with us. Thank you very much. Of course, we've seen the Kinte man, who is right here with us as well. Thank you. Let's give him a big round of applause. I've seen my own uncle, Mr. Sam Yaboua. You are here with us. Let's see him. Sam Yaboua, very popular voice on radio in those days. And again, Uncle Sam, the boys say, I should tell you now, they can also say these and not these. So we are grateful for that. Thank you very much, sir. And we have with us Mr. Alex Bannerman, who is from the National Media Commission. Thank you very much. And so do we have Mr. George Sapon, who is also from the National Media Commission, here with us. Madam Carol Annan is from the New Times Corporation. She's here with us. Madam Carol Annan. Okay, thank you very much, madam. Mr. Kofi Ahinkra is from the National Media Commission. He's also here with us. Nancy Nkansa Gwedi is from the GCB Bank Limited. She's here with us. All right, she's at the back there. Thank you very much. Professor Tim Akwahiford is right here with us. And I'm very proud to announce that one of the reasons why I'm able to stand before you this August audience to speak today is due to what Prof taught me. Prof, I'm very grateful. Thank you very much. Lord Mansfield Badu is from the Universal Merchant Bank. He's right here with us as well. Thank you very much. And Engineer John Kwesi Mensah is from the State Enterprises Commission. He's also here. Thank you very much, Engineer, for coming. And I've seen all the board members of DBC are also here. Thank you very much. Shall we see all of you by hand? The board members of DBC who are here with us, as well as the DBC Divisional Directors. All of them are here present. DBC Divisional Directors, let's show by hands that we are here in our... All right. All right. Thank you very much. Like I said at the beginning, I haven't been able to put a name to all the faces. As soon as I do that, we'll duly acknowledge you. It's time now to welcome all of us. But before we do so, let's acknowledge those who are supporting this program. And this program, remember, is live on GTV. This is live on GBC 24, GTV Live, GTV Govern, GTV Sports Plus, and Obonu TV, and it is supported by the DBC Anniversary Lectures. It is brought to you by the Unique Florals, your premier house of flowers and event design, as well as the Broadcasting Employees Cooperative Credit Union, BECU. BECU says, happy family, as well as the New Times Corporation. They are also supporting this program, and I will also say thank you to Blue Skies. Blue Skies say, revitalize the Ghanaian in you. Shall we give all these people a big round of applause? And like I mentioned earlier, when you have, in our Ghanaian tradition, even when the father calls for the son to come, even though he knows the reason why he has called you to come, he still asks you, Amanie, and then he proceeds to welcome you. Shall we welcome the Director General of the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, Major Albert Don Chibi, to welcome us to this event.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman of the National Media Commission, who also wears a special hat today, members of the Commission, members and past members of the GBC Board, past and the eminent staff of GBC who are here, chief executives of media organizations, distinguished invited guests, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we have gathered in Studio One, eagerly and expectantly, waiting to listen to our distinguished guest speaker. This person, journalist, writer, teacher, diplomat, statesman par excellence. Our topic is broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. Our distinguished speaker really needs no introduction, though protocol demands that he is introduced, and he will be introduced. My task is very simple. It is to welcome you to this program and ensure that you are very comfortably seated if you are in the studio. If you are outside the studio, we expect that you are watching and listening clearly in a very satisfactory environment wherever you are in beautiful Ghana or beyond. This is the final lecture in our distinguished speaker series. However, on Saturday, 25th July 2015, we have an open day and you are all invited so that you can see what we do, how we do what we do, or have done over the years. Come and appreciate the magic and dexterity of GVC technicians who continue on a daily basis to perform magic by coaxing obsolete, overstretched, and tired equipment to provide sound and pictures for the education, information, and and entertainment of Ghanaians. In the absence of regular, guaranteed, and secure funding, GBC has survived. Imagine what we will do with funding. In the future, a reinvigorated, re-energized, refreshed GBC will make all Ghanaians proud for all the right reasons. On this note, sit back, relax, and enjoy the intellect of our distinguished guest speaker. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Director General. And that's a typical military man. When you give him 5 minutes to speak, he speaks for 4 minutes, 59 seconds, and leaves 1 second just for emergencies. Let's give him a big round of applause. And, as I said at the beginning, I left out some names. We have with us Mr. Moses Japon. He's a former Deputy Director of TV here at DBC. Mr. Sampoku, the Business Council for Africa, Ghana. He's also here with us. Thank you very much. Mr. Francis Dazi, he's the former chair of the Advertising Association of Ghana. He's also here with us. Oh, still. Oh. I'm sorry, sir. I nearly sent you on retirement. Mr. Apili Lati is also from the Ghana Commercial Bank Limited. He's here with us. It's a lady. Thank you very much. So we'll proceed with the rest of the program. And here I have a very, very important task to perform. I have to introduce somebody I've admired as a young boy growing up, even till when I got employed at the GBC. And when I was given the task of introducing him, I, as we all do, went on Google. And recently I received some training in how to get authentic information about people from the net. And so I used that extra authentic means of searching for very authentic information about this man. And what I came up with was like a long essay. And because I do not want to bore you with that long essay, I decided to ask for help so that we could summarize all the achievements of this man so that I can introduce him within 2 minutes. My director of corporate affairs presented me with a speech which I believe is longer than the main speech that man will come and deliver. So all I want to say is that our DG has already told us that this man, and he has mentioned some of the accolades, at the young age of 28, 27, 29, thereabouts, he became the director of the Ghana Institute of Journalism. That alone is a huge achievement. This man, when the GIJ celebrated their 50th anniversary, he delivered a lecture. And for 2 solid weeks, the issues he raised made media headlines. Let's give him a big round of applause. I do not mean to tell you all the things we already know about this man. And for those who do not know, you just Google his name and all the accolades will keep coming up. He has written several articles in several columns. He has indeed been Ghana's ambassador to Sierra Leone. And whilst there, he was a lecturer. He lectured in the School of Communications at in Sierra Leone. So we know so much about this man. But I want to say something that when you Google, you will not find. And that's my personal experience. That one Friday evening, this man, who we all know so well and respect so much, called a nobody like me and said, I want you to make the headlines. I want to give you an exclusive. Are you ready for it? I said, sir, I'm ready. And the following day, Saturday morning, he called me again and said, are you ready? I said, I'm ready. He says, I'm at GBC to pick you to the Volta region. I was already at GBC because it was him. Usually I would come at 7. That day I got here at 5. So together with a driver, he picked me and drove me all the way to the Volta region, a village called Abutia Tete. Thank you very much. In this village, there was a man who was with the first president of Ghana, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, when the bomb was thrown at him. And this man actually had some pellets from that bomb in his hand. He was the bodyguard to Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. The doctors advised him not to undergo any operations because that would even make his situation worse. So from that time until about 2 years ago when I went there with Ambassador Kavrable Amihie, this man still had a pellet, and he was about 95 years old. He's gone now. May his soul rest in peace. We had arranged for an interview with this man, and he had agreed. Upon arrival, the old man said he would not speak. The story was supposed to be my story. I didn't know how to get the old man to speak. Then I learned journalistic skills from Ambassador. He got down on his knees and told the man, "This story is not about you. It is about the generations yet unborn, those who do not know what happened that day." For me, I learned how to negotiate to get an interview done. And that's how this man has affected me personally. And that's how I know he has affected the teachers who taught me, because he taught my teachers. This man taught my bosses. Those who are the bosses in my newsroom today all went through his tutelage. And this is how I want to introduce our speaker. He's a very down-to-earth man, despite all his achievements. Help me to welcome our speaker for the day, Ambassador Kavrable Amihie.
This is the most unusual introduction I've had, but I love it. Thank you, Abdul. The chair for the occasion and the chairman of the GBC Governing Board, members of the GBC Governing Board, past members of GBC Governing Board, distinguished former staff of GBC here present, the Director General Manager and staff, the Executive Secretary of NMC and members of the Commission here present, the former Chair of NMC, Ambassador Deborah, who introduced me to the rudiments of diplomacy, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, how do I start? I'll start by saying that I've been listening to a lot of morning shows on the private media, and I've learned from panelists such as Juan Kuch, Opelia Bwaji, that the first thing one does when given a platform such as GBC has given me today is to use the occasion, seize the day, and remember and greet your friends. And so let me, with your permission, use this acuña, as they say it, to greet all my classmates from Sefio Kwai, particularly Benaka and Sinti Bafboni, the Obahima of Sefio Kwai, my sister Elizabeth Nzulu, and my mates from St. Augustine's College, Boons, and the class of 1970, and all the fine teachers who influence our lives. You have heard about PPP, that's a private public partnership. There's now a new term, church private partnership. And this occurred in Kumasi on Tuesday when a schoolmate, Alex Brooks, together with the Methodist Church and the Sandman Council and his company, cut a sword to begin the Garden City Mall. So I want to greet my mate Alex Brooks for bringing a new abbreviation into the economy. I may run into trouble if I don't greet my friends and relatives in Ekwe. particularly my brother Tufuhin Kwabli. Let me also use Sekunya to greet my friend from our parish this, Nana Edward Edu, the chief executive of Cape Coast Ebusuan Drafts, and members of the Gisel Kifit Club. So I'm sure they are watching. I can't mention all their names, but I greet them. And of course, I must thank the chair, the board, and management of GBC for this rare opportunity that I never dreamt of growing up in Saviour Kwai a few decades ago. And I begin the formal speech. Mr. Chairman, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed a privilege and honor for me to be asked to deliver the final lecture of the 80th anniversary of celebration of GBC. GBC has indeed grown leaps and bounds from its small beginnings to become a mega broadcasting station, a champion station with nationwide reach, an achievement that must be celebrated and reflected upon. It is only proper that I begin my lecture by paying tribute to the founders and parent staff of GBC, not forgetting the massive support that the government of Osagyefo, Kwame Nkrumah, gave to GBC, which I believe other governments have built on. I am aware of the many sacrifices and the difficult conditions, both psychological and physical, under which generations of GBC management and staff have worked over the years, particularly during the 21 years of our history when Ghana was ruled by the GAN. The pressure has not been any less under constitutional rule, but as a testimony to the defiance of the human spirit, GBC has survived the good and bad times to tell a story. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you all know of something called plagiarism, the crime intellectuals commit when they borrow copiously from the work of others and fail to make the necessary attribution and acknowledgement. I'm sure you know the punishment that such intellectual stealers face: shame, disgrace, withdrawal of certificates, and for politicians in other parts of the world, truncated careers. I must confess, Mr. Chairman, that almost all the last three sentences I've just uttered have been copied from the previous GBC, from a previous GBC anniversary lecture. The only reason I cannot be charged with plagiarism is that just as it is today, I was the person given the honor and duty of delivering the final lecture during the 75th GBC anniversary lectures under the topic Media and Democracy, the Case of Ghana. And for these remarks, very appropriate for today. And that's why I quoted them without fear of being charged for stealing. But if I had any thought that I could copy more from the speech I delivered 5 years ago, any such consideration evaporated when it dawned on me that there's a new topic I must address today: broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. Mr. Chairman, since it was your good self who presided over the lecture in June, delivered by my schoolmate, the Director General of GBC, Major Don Chebe, retired, you may recall that the master of ceremony for the august occasion, George Sapon, set very high expectations for me when he referred to the Bible and stated in his closing remarks that the best wine is always reserved at the end for guests. We have heard that very distinguished speakers have preceded me, very eloquent speakers, and they have said it all and even better. And so as I stand here, I look up to the skies and say, we need Blessed Mary to tell her son, Jesus Christ of Nazareth, to do for me what he kindly did for the newly married couple when he turned ordinary water into vintage wine. I will not throw my arms in despair and shout out like Mario Perua Baratelli. Why always me as the last speaker? I accept my fate to bear the cross of being the last speaker, coming after all these eloquent speakers, and only ask God to anoint his poor servant with his wisdom to meet your expectations. In fact, God should complete his anointing by lowering your expectations to make my work easier. With such assurance from him that his will is always done when we ask, and that it shall be well with me. And I wish to invite you to travel with me as we reflect on our topic, broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. And I ask myself, why this topic? As expected, I have been wondering why the DG and the organizers chose this topic. I wanted to presume that the choice of this topic was possibly one way to add variety to the series of lectures, which all focus on public service broadcasting. I've tried to get into their minds, because the role of the media, broadcasting or print, and any other media is set in tradition and theory to inform, educate, and entertain. Inherent in this function is the corresponding capacity of the media to influence the affairs of men and women. In other words, the media have the power through its aggregate functions to set the agenda for a nation. The media always has or have an option, either to be part of the problem or part of the solution. As a writer once noted, mass media reach not only people's homes, but also their minds, shaping their thoughts and sometimes their behavior. It may interest you, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, to know that when the governor of Gokus, Arnold Hudson, sought to justify a budget request for starting Radio ZOY in the Gokus, which has transformed into GBC, he had a very unique role for this initiative. According to him, and I quote, radio or wireless would help prevent the spread of communism and also divert dedicated Africans whose restless mind tend to agitation and anti-governmental, not to say communistic, activities. As noted by Professor Kwame Kakari in an epic lecture titled The Ghanaian Media, National Peace and Cohesion, Governor Hudson's radio station, like other stations established by the colonial British in their colonies, was used subsequently to prosecute the colonial agenda and also mobilize colonial subjects to participate in and support the prosecution of the Second World War. When the Governor Nkrumah assumed control of GBC in 57, it had a totally different agenda for GBC, whose main medium then was radio. Comrade Kofi Bako, the then Minister of Education and Information, outlined the vision for GBC when he informed Parliament that, and I quote, radio is a great unifying agency in our country. Through it, people all over Ghana can appreciate that we are all of the same nation, with the same ideas and aspirations. Ghana is a unity, and in this small country, there is no room for regional and tribal groups, each emphasizing their own differences from the rest of the country at the expense of national unity. This vision was achieved by an outlay of programs that stressed national unity and allowed a cross-section of national languages to be heard on radio and television. The concept of community broadcasting was equally achieved by ensuring that GBC reached the length and breadth of Ghana with massive regional and district penetration. The whole idea of preserving national harmony was taken to another height when the military regime of General Ike Kutu Achampong came out with this powerful slogan, "One Nation, One People, One Common Destiny," which again GBC forcibly advocated on its airwaves. Since then, many governments have preached the same message of unity, with the media showing every support for such a noble cause. Mr. Chairman, there is no evidence up to date that the Ghanaian media have not kept faith with the national aspiration for peace and unity in our diversity. Not yesterday, not today. And to quote once again Professor Kwame Kekri, "It is very instructive that the pioneers of journalism did not exhibit narrow sectarian posture limited to their locality and its ethnic populace. Rather, the foundation they laid has been such that throughout the history of the press up to today, no newspaper has championed the cause of ethnic or provincial politics." End of quote. Mr. Chairman, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, if this is the record of the Ghanaian press or media, a fine example in patriotism, what could have advised the organizers of the lecture to request that we begin a conversation to remind broadcasters and the media at large that they should use their precious platforms to promote national harmony, cohesion, and peace? Mr. Chairman, because we live in a global village in which radio and television in other countries, notably in Rwanda and Kenya, have been cited as serving as tools for social strife and genocide, and secondly, because there could be signposts that the media of Ghana could be drifting into that trajectory of destruction, it cannot be totally out of place for us to start talking about the issue, the potential role of the media as a tool for peace and national harmony. Since, as I've indicated, Rwanda has become a reference point in any discussion about the dangerous role the media or broadcasting, particularly radio, can play in the making and unmaking of nations, let us examine briefly the role the media and other actors played in the genocide in which over 800,000 people, mostly Tutsis, lost their lives, and about 2 million Rwandese became refugees. And here I want to focus on the role of the media versus the role of politicians and other causal factors. The role played by radio in the countdown to the genocide in Rwanda is often highlighted as a major cause and the driving force for the carnage. The pro-Hutu, pro-government radio television, that's the Radio Television Libre de Mille, Colin, and another pro-Hutu newspaper, Kangura, have been cited as being highly responsible for those crimes against humanity. The Kangura newspaper cannot escape blame because there is evidence that it used its pages to preach hatred and indeed incited the massacre of Tutsis when, in December 1990, it published its version of the Ten Commandments. In this case, for Hutus, were two very outstanding commandments, namely that any Hutu who married a Tutsi, I don't know how to pronounce it, you have it, or did business with them, was a traitor. Imagine they said in Ghana that any guy who married an Nzema was a traitor. That would be inciting hatred. Again, the radio station, during the 100 days of carnage from July 1993, infamously used its platforms to encourage its Hutu listeners to exterminate the Tutsis, to cut down the tall trees, and also crush the cockroaches. There was even a coded broadcast which simply asked people to go to work. Now, when they say go to work in Ghana, it means that if you live in Tema, as Alex Bannerman lives, you drive to the NMC. But in their case, when they say go to work, it means go for your cutlasses, your sticks, and any available weapon and kill the enemy. It is very informative because of the link between political ownership and some of the manipulation that the major radio station that was used to fuel the crisis was set up by hardline Hutu extremists, wealthy businessmen, government ministers, and various relations of the president and the president of the militia. The local media, particularly radio, served as catalyst in the Rwandan crisis. And this has been well documented to the shame of journalism. Even the international media and organizations like the UN itself have been apportioned blame for not doing much to stem the tide of genocide, to prevent it or prevent it totally. But there is another school of thought that puts the blame on others, on the political elite, who exploited primordial factors such as ethnicity and political greed and successfully manipulated the media in pursuit of their ambitions. And here I want to quote what a Human Rights Watch publication of March 1990, Live Learn to Tell the Story, Genocide in Rwanda, says about this, the role of politicians or the manipulators. And I quote, "The Rwanda genocide resulted from a deliberate choice of a modern elite to foster hatred and fear to keep itself in power. This small privileged group set the majority against the minority to counter a growing political opposition within Rwanda. Then faced with rebel success on the battlefield and at the negotiating table, these few power holders transformed the strategy of ethnic divisions into genocide." An American writer, Richard Robbins, even situates the causes of the Rwanda genocide or Rwandese genocide in a wider global context when he notes that, and I quote, "Contrary to media and many government reports, the genocide was the result of Rwanda's political and economic position in the capitalist world system. It involves such monetary factors as its colonial history, the price of coffee, World Bank and International Monetary Fund policies, the global interests of Western nations, particularly France, the interests of international aid agencies, and Western attitudes towards Africa." So here the media is not being blamed. Other factors are being blamed for the genocide. And it is worthy to take note of that. Now, what lessons, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, can be drawn from the Rwandan example? In my view, it is very evident that the media of any country can be a double-edged sword in the maintenance of public order, national unity, and stability. Secondly, it is also clear that interest groups, particularly political forces in pursuit of their ambitions, can and do exploit the power of the media, notably radio, to prosecute their agenda. That the media in Rwanda, which threw all ethics and caution to the wind, were manipulated and abused by their powerful political owners. Thus, the role of politicians or the political class must be examined critically in any blame game. Thirdly, that there were indeed cracks and divisions in Rwanda, ranging from very primordial factors, such as ethnicity, to new factors, such as political and economic tensions, created by policies of Rwandese governments, and even that of international and external bodies, such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. So when you see the IMF and the World Bank interfering in your economy, be prepared for a Rwandese situation if you don't put in place other measures. A fourth observation lesson from the Rwanda crisis and similar crises in other countries such as Sierra Leone, Kenya, and Cote d'Ivoire must be that any advocacy for national harmony, stability, peace, and security must necessarily examine what factors exist in the nation that divide people and can serve as fertile grounds for social strife. It is only through a careful examination of the ground situation that the media and other actors can define for themselves an appropriate rule in the elimination of factors that have the potential to set brother against brother, sister against sister, tribe against tribe, political party against political party, and religion against religion. And then we have to ask ourselves, how united and harmonious is Ghana? How united, cohesive, and harmonious is Ghana? Ghanaians as a people pride themselves as a very united nation with a common destiny. A nation which has become a beacon of peace and stability. A nation spared of some of the bitter conflicts in other parts of the continent, even if we have seen some flashpoints of limited violence and conflict in some parts of the country. Ghanaians consider themselves so peace-living, so peace-loving, that many cannot imagine that what happened in Saloon, which saw such human carnage, could ever happen here. But Mr. Chairman, Saloons, because I live there, I prefer the short version. Before their civil war, thought like us. So did the Ivorians, who are so assimilated by French culture that they view life as one of work and pleasure. You have heard the phrase Samedi soir. And Samedi soir in Ivory Coast is Samedi soir. So we are no different from the others. The late president, may his soul rest in peace, Professor John Evans Atamels, was reminding Ghanaians that we are no different from our brothers and sisters in other places who take up arms, when he warned that a Kenya could happen in Ghana. Just as many others have said that a Liberia could happen in Ghana. Indeed, very inflammatory statements by several politicians across the political divide and echoes from by-elections in Ghana and the intensity of political campaigns during party primaries and national elections are signposts, in my view, that Ghana could travel the tragic path of other countries. We may continue to believe that we are a peaceful people, a united nation, but there are enough indices to show that Ghana needs to do more to remain an oasis of peace and unity, and that all that is great in Ghana is not good, not even bronze. And here I want to talk about Ghana's mini time bombs. I'm no prophet of doom, but I dare to say that our beloved Ghana today sits on many, many time bombs, which, unless diffused by all and sundry, particularly the political elite, can explode in our faces any day. I have this work, a book in progress, my thoughts on several issues I consider time bombs, titled The Problem with Ghana. It is inspired and modeled on a book with a similar title by the legendary Chinua Achebe, The Problem with Nigeria. In this book, I have identified the following as problem areas for our beloved Ghana. 1. Leadership crisis. Nations break when leaders are not able to keep the nation together. And that's what happened in Sierra Leone. By their acts, they divide the nation. So my view is that there's a crisis of leadership that could lead us to doom. Then, 2, there's the winner-take-all syndrome for our political system.
Then there's tribalism and chieftaincy issues. Four, there's corruption. Then there's five, institutional failures of the governance system. Six, unemployment. Seven, religion and fatalism. Eight, the growing gap between the rich and the poor. Nine, unbridled and irresponsible exercise for our rights to free speech and free press. And 10, the encircling economic doom in the world, Ghana included. I cite these as very alarming factors that can bring the skies falling down on our beloved Ghana. Time will not permit me to go into details about my diagnosis, but permit me, Mr. Chairman, to dilate on a few of the elements I've cited above. Let us consider, for example, the undercurrents of tribalism in this country, which many of us accept pose a danger to the nation, but is seen as a taboo subject that a few people dare to address with honesty and courage. In a political system where some parties confidently pitch their ultimate victory on fortunes in their wealth banks and strongholds, we cannot speak of a society whose future is anchored on ideas. The mistrust and suspicion that exist between and among various tribes in the country can only be a recipe for social tension and disunity. Mr. Chairman, even within ethnic groups and communities of the same heritage, history, and custom, there's a lot to worry about with unending disputes about land and chieftaincy titles. Recent incidents in Bimbila, the Nanumba-Kukumba War, the Alavanyo-Nkonya clashes, and the Dabon crisis are painful reminders that even among communities who share common culture, history, and geography, there are undercurrents of conflict yet to be resolved. And here, I wish to submit that our politicians and their surrogates in the media must never exploit and manipulate our diversity as was done in Rwanda. Let us shift to the battleground for political power in this country. Elections to select our president and parliamentarians. Here we have on our hands not a mini bomb, but a mega bomb waiting to explode every 4 years. Ghana, I have observed, and I'm sure you are aware, is a very politicized and polarized society, fueled by the winner take all syndrome of our politics, which further alienates and marginalizes losers in the electoral process. I was part of the IEA Winner Take All Advisory Committee, and in our rounds, we heard very horrendous stories, which you all know, about how the WTA is stretched to the point where, after elections, public places of convenience must change hands because the winner must take control. So, our protest has become a lightning rod. And because when you lose, you become a para, even if the margin of the loss is very narrow, as we saw in the 2012 elections, when you consider that scenario, then you can understand why we have phrases like do and die, or die be die, bumper for bumper, eye for eye, and jihadist rhetorics in our politics. And here I want to ask us to cast our minds to the Talency by election. I very sincerely believe that President John Mahama, when he spoke on the eve of the Talency election, by saying that it was a dress rehearsal for the 2016 elections. That statement, in my view, was neither a wish nor a prediction for a replay of the violence that marked the Tallensi by-election. I am of the opinion that all that President Mahama was saying was that the NDC will win the by-election and by implication the 2016 elections. He was not predicting violence. I want to believe that. Just as the leader of the NPP, Nana Akufo-Addo, when he also made a similar statement using different words, was not talking about violence. He was saying that the NPP will win in 2016 and that talents will be the foretaste of that. But aside what was said by various politicians on the eve of the by-election, and against the backdrop of the unfortunate display of violence beget violence spectacle at the by-election, Tallensi could indeed be the tragic dress rehearsal of the 2016 elections. And here, I wish to appeal to the political class and the media to do everything within their capacity to prevent electoral violence which can bring the country down. We should be all worried and fearful that our five elections in the Fourth Republic have nearly brought us to the brink of war, with a section of the media often beating the drums for war. I was alarmed when I read the abstract of a chapter in a book edited by security expert Kwesi Enim and a colleague Kwaku Danso titled Managing Election-Related Violence for Democratic Stability in Ghana, in which two contributors, Kwaku Danso and Eflati, observed that, and I quote, "The increasing optimism generated by Ghana's series of successful elections has led to the deception of Ghana as a bastion of democracy. This image is so misleading, given the multiple dysfunctional complexities that accompany Ghana's electoral and political process. The writers do not share the optimism of many and go on to warn, and I quote, that electoral violence has been a recurring issue that continues to push Ghana towards the brink of all our violence each year. Such is the seriousness of the problem that it is difficult to predict with certainty if Ghana will survive the upcoming general election in 2012 without major political upheaval. Mr. Chairman, Ghana did survive. But if you recall, the next 8 months was a long period of tension as the nation awaited the verdict of the Supreme Court. Political temperatures rose and governance became very difficult for the government of the day, which was also waiting whether it would be allowed to continue or retire. I want to predict that tensions will be higher in 2016, with some parties already who used to have very pacific postures now threatening to form electoral vigilante groups with fearful names like sea lions from the animal kingdom and the Atlantic Ocean to protect their turf and ensure victory. This press, the chairman, should be taken seriously, because not only have we democratized politics, free speech, and free many things in this country, the signs, according to security experts, are that we seem to have also democratized violence with an increasing number of arms in the system. Media reports allege that some of the political threats at the Tallensi by-election openly wielded the all-fearful and lethal AK-47 as against the certified Ghana police officers wielding batons and sticks from the colonial era. Ghana is certainly not the United States of America, with an expansive Wild West of cowboys and swag kit of guns. But official sources indicate that in 2003, as many as 211,581 guns were officially registered or licensed for first-time owners in the country. 211,581 guns. The number for first-time gun owners might have declined to only 4,000, 5,000 in 2012. But security experts say that there is a disturbing proliferation of unlicensed guns and small arms in Ghana and the sub-region that puts grave danger to peace and security. If you have seen today's Daily Guard and other publications, there is this alarming report that 800 boxes of ammunition were seized yesterday at Totiman. That news should worry us. And here, let us remember again that more arms beget more violence, as chief tenancy and land disputes, as well as by-elections, have shown in Ghana. I cited the uncertain economic climate as a possible threat to our stability. Mr. Chairman, besides the tensions and divisions generated by the progressive system of unity call, the economy of Ghana, if not well managed, with regard for equity and justice, can be the mother of all problems for a united and peaceful Ghana. I'm not going to walk the high theoretical ground of a Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia, a Dr. Abe, or a Dr. Ninoy Thompson, and predict that we could go the way Greece is going. But simply put, Ghana's post-independence politics and economics have failed to deliver the high expectations of our people. We may not necessarily have on our hands the classical class society that Lenin and Marx preached, which was fueled by capitalism and industrialization. But we are nevertheless creating a society of haves and have-nots. East Lagos, Tesacos, against Sodoms and Gomorrahs. The divisions this time are being created by politics of greed and corruption. The post-independence economy of Ghana has so far not succeeded in creating a socio-economic landscape in which people sincerely believe they can have their fair share of the national wealth. We cannot talk of peace and harmony when some traditional leaders speak of injustice against their regions, as the Omahini of Lower Axum and the president of the Western Region House of Chiefs, Awulai Atibukusu II, is reported to have said against the backdrop of high expectations when oil was discovered in the Western Region when he met a minister of state. And I would like to quote him. Awulai said, "The Western Region is really deprived of development. Our children have no jobs, so they naturally migrate to bigger towns in search of work. Our towns and villages are decaying, and our youth are becoming restless." The Omahini, or the Awulai, ended by asking, and I quote, "the government and the oil companies to correct mistakes and injustice in the Western Region that the Western Region has suffered for over 100 years. That's a very serious statement. Injustice against a region for 100 years. He said, I didn't say it, but he said it. And many paramount chiefs, if you read the papers, if you listen to radio, when they have the chance, make such complaints and ask for a fair share of the national cake or wealth. And Mr. Chairman, we indeed have on our hands a large population of very frustrated and restless unemployed youth whose anger, frustration constitute a time bomb of its own. Just imagine, Mr. Chairman, that the fact that our universities produce about 70,000 graduates every year. Add to that the hundreds of thousands of SS students whose academic life a nation should be worried if it happens to have not only associations of serial causes, which is good for free speech, but on a negative side, an association of unemployed graduates with a membership list of over 24,000, according to your leadership. I heard that only 2 days ago, that there are 24,000 members of this association. Indeed, President John Mahama rightly identified youth unemployment as a threat to our stability when he told the 47th ordinary session of the ECOWAS Heads of State Summit in Accra that the growing unemployment among the youth posed a threat to the peace and tranquility in the region. Mr. Chairman, the spate of strikes and demonstrations in recent years, with even state attorneys going on an unprecedented strike, reflect the growing despondency, a feeling of injustice and alienation among a good number of Ghanaians. National harmony and cohesion eventually suffer under the weight of some of the elements I have cited so far, particularly any thoughts that there is no economic justice for some or for the majority. Add to all these considerations the fact that the International Monetary Fund, which President Nyerere described as the International Ministry of Finance, is very actively involved in our economy and prescribing all kinds of medication that are bound to deepen the cracks and divisions in Ghana. Against such a backdrop, it becomes the duty of government and all state institutions, including the media, to relentlessly work towards the elimination of all negative forces that divide the nation. Our Constitution, Chapter 6, outlined the building blocks for national harmony and unity with several provisions which, if followed, can keep the nation glued together. Our politicians, when in government and when in opposition, must see to it that the aims of the directive principles are fulfilled. The media can help promote national harmony by faithfully holding the government and all institutions accountable as they are mandated to do by the Constitution. The history of our nation tells us that bad governance has been the bane of our development as a united nation, that the political class often exploit primordial factors such as religion and ethnicity to set us against each other, that some politicians in particular in these times that they constitute a significant part of the ownership structure of broadcasting do attempt to manipulate and misuse the media to prosecute their search for and maintenance of power. It will interest you to know that most of the stations in Ghana now have political people behind them. And if you link how in Rwanda the media was exploited by politicians, then we should be worried if politicians in Ghana are also taking that journey. And so it is important that our media continue to hold all of us accountable. In fact, in my view, the media must practice what has been defined as peace journalism, the kind of journalism that takes an advocacy approach that concentrates on stories that highlight peace initiative, tone down ethnic and religious differences, prevent further conflict, focus on the structure of society, and promote conflict resolution, reconstruction, and reconciliation. And from lessons gained from the Rwandan case and the realities and challenges of our own Ghana, the media should, without fear or favor, confront all the fundamental issues that produce and provoke social conflict and mayhem in the country. Mr. Chairman, I'm sure you all know about Joseph Goebbels, that notorious Nazi minister of information. He appreciated the role of radio. He described radio as the eighth greatest power, and saw radio, and saw the 28th century as the age of radio. If you live today, you will say that the 21st century is the age of broadcasting, television included, and social media. And he has this very interesting quote or statement about the power of radio. And I wish to quote him. I should not be quoting a bad guy. But what he says is very pertinent to our discussion. And I quote Goebbels, "A radio, and for our sake, broadcasting and the media as a whole, that does not seek to deal with the problems of the day, does not deserve to influence the broad masses, and soon becomes an empty playground for technicalities and intellectual experiments, and if I may add, mere noise makers. To promote peace and national progress, the media must have the courage, with all the issues of our times, in order to be relevant. For instance, in my very sincere view, the media of Ghana should not be intimidated by the recent invocation by Parliament of something called contempt or scandalizing Parliament, and therefore shy away from critically reporting the rule of our lawmakers. It is Parliament that ratifies all the loans that can define our progress or our decline as a nation. And so we must be courageous enough to take on Parliament. It's a rule that is defined for us by Constitution. Here we have a democracy that has stripped even the high office of the presidency of any immunity. We live in a democracy where the president of the land is subjected to all kinds of criticisms and sometimes insults. And so far, thanks to the repeal of the criminal libel law, nobody gets hauled before the Flagstaff House or the presidency to explain and defend his verbal attacks on the president. And so to me, the media should begin to a debate on whether the law that allows Parliament to summon black Rastafarians and black professors to the August House is proper or not. We need to debate it. At the core of this emerging trend is the question of the citizens' right to free speech. For instance, should the media keep mute when some parliamentarians, as you have seen during the annual State of Nation address by the President, in the name of parliamentary privileges and immunity, heckle and harass the president of the land? Is it proper? Should it be criticized? I think it should be criticized. Or the debate should continue, should be begun by the media, because I have seen very ugly sights in our house. In other places, you have seen the State of the Nation address in the U.S. You have seen Republicans who don't like Obama stand up because he represents the nation. And so when that ugly sight or scene happens in Parliament, is it an exercise of parliamentary privilege and immunity that should be respected? I have strong views on that, but I think the debate should be begun by the media. And so all I'm saying, that the media of broadcasting must positively impact on our national aspirations for peace, stability, good governance, and unity by discussing the issues, by raising the issues. But, Mr. Chairman, beyond appeals, litanies, and pontifications for media responsibility and ethical conduct, There should be policy backed by legislation to ensure that the media, as it were, behaves responsibly. It is in this regard that I'm happy that the process for a broadcasting bill has reached a very advanced stage. Only yesterday, the NMC and the Ministry of Communication held a stakeholders conference on a proposed broadcasting bill that will strengthen the industry and provide a framework for responsible broadcasting. The NMC is also taking all appropriate measures, including effective monitoring and evaluation of broadcasting. Our monitoring and evaluation project, kindly supported by the European Commission, is in full flight. The NMC will very soon launch our Boba monitoring unit, once again funded by the European Commission. The NMC, per the spirit and letter of the Constitution, does not intend to bite and should not bite, but it shall ensure that all in the broadcasting and print media operate by rules and regulations informed by best universal practices and our history. Public media, particularly GBC, community radio, and indeed the private media, both print and electronic, indeed, need to be financially sound and independent to undertake their mandate, which leads me to share a few thoughts on the resumption of TV license fee collection, which has been a subject of debate in the media. So I start with the first question. Why must we pay TV license fee? As a starter, let it be stated that this is not a new law, but one that has been in existence for decades in Ghana. The rate then was 30 pesos. It did not make too much economic sense to kill or collect 30 pesos with a high amount. And so the NMC mandated the board of GBC under the dynamic leadership of its chairman, Mr. Kwame Asante, and management to take steps for a review of the fee. Ghana's parliament, in its wisdom, passed the appropriate legislation to adjust the rate to a reasonable fee of 3 cedis per month with related adjustments for other uses. Since the NMC announced the resumption of the TV licenses at revised rates, Ghana's vibrant airwaves and social media have been inundated with mixed comments. Some have ridiculed and dismissed the idea of collecting TV licenses fee in these times. That Ghanaian, in this, or is it this or this? This. I've been asked to pay more for petrol and other social services. The hashtag campaign of You Won't Pay in Trier TV license fee has even been launched. As a messenger of what some consider very bad news, I've been confronted by friends with echoes of You Won't Pay, or the others have been kind enough to simply ask me to explain why they should pay the TV license fee. Mr. Chairman, I've heard statements such as, why should I pay TV license fee for boring GBC? I do not watch GBC, and so why should I pay TV license fee? GBC is useless and should solve its problems by first dealing with its bloated staff. GBC should compete with the private broadcasters and not waste our time. GBC is not BBC. And so stop the argument that TV licenses are paid in the UK, South Africa, Australia, and other places. Some have even questioned why private broadcasters should enjoy from the TV license fee. Indeed, these views have been expressed by all manner of people. And sometimes I feel very sad because some comrades and fellow travelers have for once abandoned me and chosen a different path in the debate. My consolation, though, is that many more comrades, like Kwesi Pratt Jr., Peter Wisdom Awuku, and Kwesi Ajiman, have stayed the course with me, with NMC, and came to our defense, a defense we welcome, because these voices of support are as important and weighty as those who have argued forcibly against the fee, like Dr. Charles Yokubrebe, Herbert Fable, and a social media friend and brother, Emusani Medu, and some very powerful radio talk show hosts. I've even heard some opposition MPs, angry attacking the corruption of TV license fee, and wondered whether they, as members of parliament, were playing Rip Van Winkle, if you know what Rip Van Winkle does, sleeping. Whether they were sleeping during the process that resulted in the passing or the revision of the TV license fee. For the records, I believe Ghana's parliament did the right thing when it passed the appropriate legislative instrument to revise the long-standing TV license fee. I believe parliament had a bigger picture of how the payment of the fee can guarantee the financial independence of GVC and thus win it from governmental subvention and deeply insulate GVC from governmental control, because he who pays the piper can call the tune. Between the NMC, the Ministry of Communication, and other stakeholders such as GIBA, we sincerely believe that the funds generated from the TV license fee would ultimately be to the benefit of the entire media industry, both private and public owned, training institutions and professional associations, and further guarantee their independence and promote high professional standards. It is true that GBC will remain the highest beneficiary, but there are many good reasons that GBC should be funded by the state to serve its mandate of serving as a true public service broadcaster. Supporting private and community broadcasting, particularly the many disadvantaged broadcasters outside Accra, will be an attractive way for them to produce and broadcast programs that could serve the national cause and ensure that they exist to serve their communities. Again, for the records, the debate about the relevance of TV license fee in this age and times is also going on in the UK, where the Conservative Party, based on its ideology and anger by what it perceives as anti-Tory bias of BBC, is moving all the heavens and a lot of earth from former colonies to abolish TV license fee. Mr. Chairman, many of us in Africa love BBC for its interesting and educative programs. But even in the UK, there is again this ongoing debate about the relevance of BBC, because there's a vibrant private broadcasting sector with equally good, if not better, programs or content. Making a case for the BBC, a British journalist, Chris Brandt of The Independent, had this to say, and I quote him, "Why a Conservative government would want to yet further cut our soft power across the world or diminish a British institution is beyond me. We do need reform at the BBC. It should make sensible, efficient savings, cut waste, do more for younger audiences, monitor top salaries, cut unnecessary management costs. My fear, though, is that if the government war on anti, as the BBC is called, is successful, the BBC will be a national irrelevance in 2027. And then he tried to argue about the relevance of BBC. And I want to quote him again. He writes, "At key moments, BBC has helped to define us as a nation, and I will argue as a united nation. Think of the bombings in London, or the week that Princess Diana died, or the general election, or the Olympics. In time of sorrow and of celebration, it can be the glue that holds us together. And I, for one, believe that is public service. The British creative industries work because it has the BBC at its heart. The BBC doesn't harm any industry. It fosters, it creates a competition for quality, surely a laudable item for a free market tourist. It develops skills and talent in front of the camera and beyond the camera that other broadcasters often end up using. The £3.7 billion sterling from the license fee is the largest investment in the arts. Can we say that the same about GBC? I want to attempt to say same about GBC. Ladies and gentlemen, GBC is new BBC, but it is not as useless and irrelevant as some will make us believe, and has over the years been doing many of the things that BBC does so well to applause from us. In fact, the BBC we all like to praise as a model in broadcasting has achieved its reputation because of the TV license fee British citizens have paid over the years, irrespective of whether they watch BBC or not. It is TV licenses that enable BBC, but these words are all mine, it's not for the man. It is TV licenses that enable BBC to broadcast special programs like Hard Talk to its former colonies and the world. You know, the Hard Talk that you watch here is not broadcast. Yes. So they pay the TV licenses to serve us. And I want to argue that GBC's full potential has often in our history been truncated by underfunding from the state, which incidentally gave the public service mandate. Again, military interventions and the long hand of governmental control from the CPP government, the PP government, the PMP government, the NDC government, and the MPP government have not allowed GBC to become a true public service broadcaster. The ugly and bad side of its operations, which the 1992 Constitution has sought to rectify, and which the TV license fee seeks to rectify. Mr. Chairman, let me repeat. GBC is not as useless as some will have us believe. It was once Ghana's soft power on the African continent with its external service broadcast to Africa. GBC has defined us as a nation by allowing major and minority tribes such as my own to have a voice and access to radio and television. And listen to this one carefully. Accra is a Adangbe land. Accra is a Adangbe land. But what do you see? It is swamped with radio stations which use tree. And so there's an anomaly there. It is GBC that has allowed the Adangbe community, owners of the national capital and its environs, a chance to have a voice with a dedicated radio FM station, Ubunu FM. If you want to measure GB's relevance by the popular tree
an English broadcast shows in urban Accra, Kumasi, and maybe Takoradi, you will dismiss GBC with very poor marks. But as the chairman said, go to the regions where non-English speakers depend solely on GBC for broadcasts in their local languages. Programs that may sound boring to many DSTV addicts, but are popular to the people in those communities. GBC, Mr. Chairman, is indeed not as useless as some will make us believe. Many of the critics of GBC may be right when they say they never watch or do not watch GTV, the flagship of GBC. I should be honest with you and confess that I, Cabra, do not always watch GTV. But GBC is not just GTV. GBC consists of many channels, which many people love to watch. GBC is made up of the 10 regional radio stations that rural communities listen to and identify with. GBC is also the training school that has over the years produced broadcasters for itself and the entire broadcasting industry. We have been told so much about the migration from analog to digital broadcasting. Ghana missed the June 2015 deadline, but will have to migrate by next year. For those who may not be aware of, it is the nationwide technological infrastructure of GBC which is providing the biggest platform for Ghana's migration process. GBC is again the station that provided the basis for the takeoff of Joy FM and Metro TV, and its base serves a lot of private stations in the industry. At the national level, Mr. Chairman, GBC, with all its constraints, is a platform that defines us as a people, which provides unbiased, objective, and nationalistic programs. GBC has been a promoter and preserver of our diverse culture. It is through GBC that many people see their cultures, be it Kundum, Afashe, Homo, Hubechocho, Damba, what have you, on television. If it is Farmers' Day, it is GBC that broadcasts and celebrates the contribution of our farmers to national development. By freely broadcasting the 8-month election petition in 2013, which others have done for high fees, GBC kept the nation glued together, deepened our democracy, and helped prevent any disaster as ordinary Ghanaians soaked themselves in pink sheets and covered themselves with better and further particulates. The public broadcasting of sessions of parliament and the work of some committees, such as the PAC, that is the Public Accounts Committee, certainly does not harm our governance system, but fosters it. Our creative arts, the Osofudazis, the ODs, have indeed benefited from the platforms offered by GBC all over the years. And like the BBC, GBC develops skills and talent in front of the camera and beyond the camera that other broadcasters often end up using. But for its midwifing rule, the broadcasting industry will be worse than it is today. GBC has promoted sports in Ghana. It allowed us to follow the artistic achievements of the great Azuma Nelson. GBC has over the years united the nation by broadcasting free to its viewers major sporting events like the African Cup of Nations, the World Cup, and the Olympics Games. GBC's religious programs have allowed the various faith groups in the nation to be seen and heard on the airwaves, even if they do not have the monies to pay for commercial rates. Furthermore, let it be stated that GBC, under its Act of Establishment, and under the Constitution, like all the state-owned media, have been given a public service rule
which explains why those in the private sector, unlike those in the private sector, GBC is obligated to afford all parties and all presidential candidates fair and equitable access to the public-owned media. Like the BBC, GBC needs some reforms, serious reforms, right rationalization of its staff, prudent financial management, which previous boards and the current board have tackled and are tackling with all the attention it deserves. Those who believe that GBC and the other state media are so irrelevant, I believe, could even take the advocacy to the highest point by calling for the privatization of GBC and all the state-owned media, at which stage the state and the nation will be spared the agony of supporting all these useless state-owned media. But I dread that day because it will sink our democracy, since smaller voices will be denied fair and equitable access to this powerful public media. When that hour comes, probably as fast as possible, so that we offload the burden of paying TV license fee or any other tax to support GBC and other media, the highest political bidder will acquire GBC and the other state-owned media. Then there will be no level playing field for the smaller parties. And even the two biggest parties, should one of them, possibly the NDC, if the sale takes place before the 2016 elections, manage to acquire DBC, then the other parties, including the biggest opposition party, will not have a platform. When that happens, the NPP cannot go to the Supreme Court, as it did in 1994, to demand that DBC should give it equal time to offer its view on the budget, as it had done for NDC. I sincerely believe, Mr. Chairman, that the TV license fee is good for GBC, for the media industry, but Parliament, which has made it possible for this new realistic fee of 3 cedis per month, may, in its wisdom, listen to those who say in Tua and abolish TV license fee totally. But that single act of abolition will not end state funding of GBC, because the government of the day, unless it also decides to sell GBC or close it down, as happened to the public broadcaster in Greece, will still use the taxpayers' money to fund GBC and exploit that as a leverage to control GBC. Even if the constituent shouts that they should give space to everybody, that the government should not control GBC, because the constituent doesn't provide money. It's the government of the day that provides the money, and we want to end that kind of leverage. But I want to also argue that state funding of public and private media is nothing new. Many Scandinavian countries, notably Norway, Finland, and Sweden, have come to the conclusion that media performs better, that media accessibility is better and higher if the media as a whole is supported by the state. France shares the same view. The budget for support for the private media in 2013 was 400 million euros. Benin and Togo also fund the private media, even if it is in the low range of $600,000 per year. Of course, state funding must never result in governmental control of the media, private and public owned. In fact, one of the rationale for TV licenses everywhere is to totally insulate public broadcasters from governmental control and ensure a true public self-broadcasting and not state broadcasting, which has been the lot of GBC, because the government of the day in our history directly funds GBC and uses this leverage as a form of control, because as has been established, he who pays the piper calls the tune. As you all know, the state in Ghana is expected to support the state-owned media. But there's a policy to win them off governmental subvention. The current regime of support is not good for media independence. Statements by some critics that GBC continues to be a mouthpiece for government, a view which is not entirely true, is indeed a very good reason to fund GBC through another means outside direct governmental subvention. Then GBC will become the ideal public service broadcaster that we all desire. But for me, as I come to the end of my intervention, I want to say that I believe sincerely that payment of the TV licenses will help GBC and others in the industry. The NMC will be welcome to any proposal for a model that will ensure this vision. But for now, whilst the law is there, let us do what is right. Either get the law abolished or do our patriotic duty of respecting the law by paying the revised fee. Finally, let me assure the nation that the NMC shall and will ensure judicious use of monies collected under the TV license fee and any other fund established for the purpose of promoting true public service broadcasting in Ghana and generally promote high professional standards in the Ghanaian media. I want to thank you for your attention, and God bless Ghana.
Thank you very much. And I expect the applause to be louder than it is right now. And thank you for giving him the standing ovation. You may now be seated. Thank you very much. And Ambassador Kabrabli Amihie has just spoken to us about broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. And at the beginning of the speech, he said that we should all lower our expectations. And I'm sure that by now, those who lower their expectations will be very disappointed, because he went beyond my expectations in particular. And for those who are very familiar with some of his journalistic writings, you would have probably come across one of his articles which spoke about, I think the topic was money cannot hide. Yes, money cannot hide. And in that article, he talks about how when one is poor, one begins to see everything done by rich people as unnecessary. So you don't have money to buy a 4x4 car. So why is that person driving a 4x4 car when you could easily have bought, you know, a saloon car? When you get money, you buy a 4x4 car. So just in that line that he says money cannot hide, I say quality and intelligence cannot hide. He has shown a lot of quality and a lot of intelligence. You know, I was speaking to somebody who says he was a classmate. He was just telling me about how intelligent Ambassador was in his school days. And that's how he described him. That he's one of those young men who, in those days, when you were writing examinations, say question two, everybody is done. Question answered. Then you find his hand up. Say, sir, there's a problem with question two. And indeed, when you investigated, you found that there was a problem with question two. That was how intelligent he was, and he's still that intelligent. He deserves a big round of applause. And as he made his presentation, I was just wearing my journalistic cloak, and I was looking for sound bites as a TV journalist. So he spoke about political polarization and noted it down. Oh, that would be my soundbite. Then he spoke about currency and the issues he raised. I said, wow, okay, let me put the first soundbite aside and choose the soundbite. Then he proceeded to also talk about unemployment and media ownership. At every stage, I found a new soundbite for my intended story. But when he came to the issue of TV licenses, and I turned and I looked at the direction of my deputy director general, and I saw the expression of her face, I knew that was a soundbite. Ambassador, thank you very much. for this lecture. I particularly have learnt a lot, and I hope that our audience and those watching from our homes and offices have also learnt a lot. We'll go for a short break. When we come back, the chairman will give his closing remarks.
Every household, restaurant, canteen, hotel, or any institution with a TV set or equipment capable of receiving TV signal is required to pay TV license. With your TV license, broadcasting in Ghana is going to get more exciting with educating and entertaining programs, news updates, current affairs programs, including live matches and event proceedings. TV license in Ghana, definitely a wind of change.
Part of GBC's 80th anniversary, the state broadcaster in the month of July will bring back to your screen the newsreaders who made it a joy to watch back in the day.
Vida Granting Asante,
Edward Fache,
Sam Yeboah,
Robert Ousu,
and the list goes on. Do you remember? These were the leaders.
The benchmark.
The standard bearers.
The bellwethers.
The trendsetters.
They delivered the day's news with perfection par excellence. So, we'll rope them in the month of Climaxes, ABC Climaxes 80th anniversary.
Catch them live on the news.
And the state broadcaster doing their job and reliving the day.
ABC, your authentic and trusted voice of Ghana.
Thanks very much for staying with us here on GTV, on GBC 24, on GTV Sports Plus, on Obonu TV, on GTV Govern, and also on Radio Ghana, as well as on GBC 24. We've been listening to the lecture, which has just been delivered by Ambassador Cabral Blay Ami here on the topic, broadcasting a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. And I forgot to introduce one person. She is the managing director of the New Times Corporation, and she's here with us. Madam, shall we? And of course, my deputy director general was also here with us. And when Ambassador was speaking about the Dangbe and the fact that we have Obonu TV and radio, I saw Auntie Claire, who is also here with us. She's the manager. And shall we see you? Thank you very much. All right, thank you very much. And so at this point, I'll call on the board chairman, Mr. Richard Kwame Asante, to give his closing remarks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the ambassador deserves another round of applause. I'm not going to say much about what he said, because then I would take the shine out of it. But I have a few words to describe the lecture. It's humorous. It's daring. It's bold. With the potential to cause some trouble for him, maybe. It is fearless. Sometimes fearful. Today I'll say tofiakwa. It is challenging, it's courageous, it's clearly woven, a serious food for thought. But the beauty of all is, we thank you for believing in GBC. And I wish to assure you that we would make judicious use of the TV license fees when we do collect them. And as you indicated in the beginning of using this Akwenya, let me also use this Akwenya to clear a few of the misconceptions that have also come into the open. These fees we are talking about have been approved by Parliament under the Fees and Charges Miscellaneous Provisions Act 2009, Act 793, and amended by the Fees and Charges Amendment Instrument 2014, LI 2216, of 22nd December 2014. And if anybody is looking for copies of this LI, please go to the Assembly Press. There are basic laws which govern the TV license since 1966. That's when it was passed. At that point, I was 15 years old. I didn't know anything about it. I'm wondering how many of us sitting here were 20 years old. But Mr. Deborah, obviously, was more than that. Apart from him, maybe Professor, you are not even... Exactly. So, only Ambassador could relate to the TV license, and probably one or two here. So, in 2015, not many understand or have knowledge of what this is all about. And it's not a new thing. The Television Licensing Act of 1966, NLCD 89, came into force on 1st of July 1966. It's been amended once by Television License Amendment Law 1991, PNDC 257. There are 14 sections of NLCD 89, and only two sections were amended in 1991. The penalty section and who has the right to make regulations. All the other 12 sections remain the same. There are also regulations in 1966, LI 524, LI 527, and these were revoked by Television License Regulations 1991, LI 1520. The current provisions are the Fees and Charges Miscellaneous Provisions Act of 2014. And in the regulations of 1991, which has not been changed, says any person who acquires or owns a television receiving set shall within 30 days of such acquisition or ownership notify the Director General of GBC or his representative, as provided in form number 10. There's a form to the schedule of your acquisition of ownership. How many of us have done this? And the new amendment for the Fees and Charges, LI 2216 of 2014, amended a number of fees and charges. I think there are about 60 or so odd fees and charges. Television licensing was one of them. So if we want to abolish it, then it means that all of those must be taken out. It affects a broad number of institutions and organizations. What you pay to register a company, the Register General, the forms, all over the place. NAFTA, call it anything. It's everywhere. And under the Television License Decree of 1966, as amended in 1991, GBC is empowered to issue television licenses and apply the license fees prescribed by that law. GBC is also responsible for enforcing license holding and pursuing license fee evaders to ensure license fee collection is effective. So, all of these are stated there. So, the basic laws are there. They have not been changed since 1991. So, currently, there's no new law that has been passed. There's the attempt to compare GBC and BBC. And as was rightly pointed out, GBC is no BBC. But we do some of the right things also. The BBC is the public service broadcaster of the United Kingdom. Its work is funded principally by an annual television license fee, which is charged to all British households, companies, and organizations using any type of equipment to receive or record live television broadcasts. The fee is set by the British government, agreed by Parliament, and used to fund the BBC's extensive radio, TV, and online services covering the nations and regions of the UK. And as early as 2014, it also funds the BBC World Service, which was launched in 1932, and which provides comprehensive TV, radio, and online services in Arabic and Persian and broadcast in 28 languages, which the British, people do not look at. The principal means of funding the BBC is through television license. It costs £145.50 per year per household. And since April 2010, that is, in today's city terms, I don't even know how much it is. It's around about 800 Ghana cedis. Our 30 pesos cannot be converted into pence. I don't know how much it is. And such a license is required to receive broadcast television across the UK, the Channel Islands, and the Isle of Man. According to the BBC's 2013-14 annual report, the total income was £5 billion, of which £3.726 billion was in license fees. That's about 73%. £1 billion from the BBC's commercial businesses. BBC does commercial. It obtained £1 billion. Aside of all this, £244.6 million from government grants, of which £238.5 million is from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office for the BBC World Service. They get about £72 million from other income, such as rental collections and royalties from overseas broadcasts of programming. BBC undertakes commercial broadcasting. Ladies and gentlemen, I've gone through this just to make the following points. That the TV license is paid not because you watch or you do not watch GTV, but because you own or use a TV set. In fact, if you look at the law, the full title is TV Set Licensing Fee. The revision of TV license, I'm afraid, is not an illegal act. I think that it is well grounded in the law. So, GTV is not that useless. Thanks, Ambassador, for believing in us. The TV license, I'm not too sure, is a conditionality from the IMF or any other foreign institution. The successive GBC management and boards have tried, but unsuccessfully, to have a revision. NMC has been very supportive. Parliament has been very supportive. And that's why we are where we are, today. And we can do better with this funding. As the guest speaker said, until a new funding model comes up, would appeal to all of us to help GBC to pay your TV license so that we can continue to cover events like the Independence Day, which cost us about $54,000 per coverage. May Day celebrations, which cost us about $50,000. Republic Day, which cost us about another $55,000. Eight other, some $45,000. Founders Day, some $50,000. Eid Fitr, some $45,000. National Best Teachers Awards, about $156,000 if we move away to the northern part into the regions. National Farmers Day, also about $160,000. AU Day, about $50,000. Coverage of Public Accounts Committee sittings, and we do this about 26 times probably in a year, which is about $1.5 million. Coverage of Meet the Press, some 18, so odd events, about $800,000. Coverage of National Policy Fair, about $60,000. Coverage of Regional Policy Fair, about $500,000. That's about 8 of them. State of Nations Address, about $50,000. Veteran of Government Appointees, depends on how many, The last time we checked, we had spent about $500,000. National Prayer and Thanksgiving Service, some $50,000. Government for the People Assemblies, and the list is endless. And we continue to do this, and we'll do them. And this will pay. And apart from this, we lose revenue and opportunity costs. During the 8 months of the Supreme Court hearings, we would cut people without, informing them. And some advertisers came and took away their money. So we are all appealing that let us receive this and help our nation. And let's make GBC a truly an independent public and a broadcaster. Before I sit down, I'll do two things. One is I'll ask the Director General to give some highlights of the collection mechanism, some 5 minutes. And then also turn myself into a televangelist and say, please turn to the person sitting on your left and say, as for me, I will pay the TV license fees. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I'll do this very fast, and I'll just give you the highlights of how we're going to go about it. I know there is a fear out there that we are going to be knocking on doors one by one across the country. I think that is the past. Thankfully, we now have technology which will assist us. So we are going to deploy two payment methods from the beginning. Phase one of the rollout. And we have put in place an electronic payment method, which would be most convenient for many of us in the urban centers of the country. We have set up a website, which is tvlicense.com.gh. And all information about TV license will be readily available at that website. I repeat, tvlicense.com.gh. And the various payment methods will all be there. That is under the electronic payment system. Then we have manual payments. This manual payments we are rolling out immediately in collaboration with Ghana Post. Thankfully, we both subsist under the same ministry. And so Ghana Post has 368 post offices and stations across the country. And we are using 175 of them which don't have internet access in the real, real rural where I come from, those will be available for use. As we roll out into the future, we will see the gaps, even when we have deployed these electronic and manual payment methods. That is where we intend to bring on board commission agents who will take care of some of the rather peculiar and very special parts of the country, which will require that due to the sparse nature of the population and many other reasons, you might require people to walk the ground to collect the TV license. But probably very important and key to the collection of TV license, what will infuse efficiency and effectiveness eventually, will be digital migration. Now, we all know Ghana will go digital, all things being equal, by April 2016. That is when the digital platforms across the country would have been constructed. And then the digital platform will give us a facility which will ensure that payment will be most convenient, because we can then deploy even mobile money platforms in the payment. And at the same time, we will achieve close to 90-something percent in collection for obvious reasons. The details are the license. When you go to tvlicense.com.gh, you see the details of why we are very sure of achieving 90-plus in collection. I know we've had a long day. We won't bore you, but we want to assure you, all the stakeholders, that a lot of work is being done. And at the same time, we are open to any new ideas which will ensure that we all grow our media industry. Now, this TV license fee is going to provide funding for total media right across the landscape, not only broadcasting. Because as Ambassador, our guest speaker, intimated, we believe that there is space for an African broadcasting station to be able to tell the African story. I think that space is still vacant, and we have an opportunity to fill that space. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and Director General of the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation. We've come to the part where we thank God for seeing us through this lecture. And I'll invite Alhaji Ridwan Abbas from the Hausa section here at GBC to give us the closing prayer. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Please, do forgive me. I skipped one of the programs. We will have the vote of thanks. Sorry, Aladi. Right. Just one more minute. Okay. Thank you very much. We have the vote of thanks by Juliet Kwachi from Radio GBC. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the GBC board, invited guests, Director General and Deputy Director General, directors, members of the NMC, colleague workers, ladies and gentlemen. I'm happy to do the vote of thanks for the last in the series of anniversary lectures. It makes me the last baby of all those who have done the lectures. And being the last baby certainly comes with a lot of privileges, and I'm looking forward to enjoying it soon. From a single wired relay station in July 1935, this is how far we have come in 8 years, and multiple nationwide channels of broadcasting. G.B. Sten said, silent gratitude isn't much use to anyone, and I agree, and therefore saying thank you is in order. We are grateful to God Almighty for bringing us this far to the end of a series of anniversary lectures. We remain grateful to all the past speakers, and permit me to mention them. Mr. Osei Chemensa Bonsu, for his lecture on public service broadcasting in a commercially competitive environment, Professor Stephen Adai for speaking to us on the relevance of public service broadcasting, Dr. Joyce Ai on a milestone of quality and sound broadcasting, promoting Ghana's heritage and aspirations in a changing world, Honorable Alban Bagbin on public service broadcasting at the crossroads, our Director General, Major Retired Albert Donchebe, for his lecture on public service broadcasting, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And our speaker for today, Ambassador Cabral Bleyami here, for his lecture on public service broadcasting, a vital tool for national harmony and cohesion. Thank you all for sharing with us your wealth of experience and knowledge. And to Ambassador Ami here, I say, Medawase, Meye Umoke Erale, Wama Yezukwa Debie. And that's just between the two of us. If you want to know the meaning, you can get to any of us later. We also appreciate all our invited guests for making time of your busy schedules to be here. Many thanks to the past and current board members of the GBC, the Director General and his deputy, and all directors. We are grateful also to all our stakeholders and organizers of the anniversary lecture series. We remain grateful to everyone who has supported us in any form on this journey. Many thanks also go out to members of staff for your contributions and your presence. We thank our viewers and listeners who have kept faith with us over the years. It is because of you we do all that we are doing. We will continue to be the authentic and trusted voice of Ghana and lead the broadcasting and communications industry through quality programming. Thank you for doing the viewing and listening on all our networks across the country. And we're also live on the internet at gbcghana.com. If you knew that, I'm sure you listened to us and viewed us there. We will continue working towards national harmony, cohesion, and peace because we acknowledge the role of the media in affecting public mood and opinion. Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Gracias. Obrigado. Shukran gidan. Yadamase. Akpenami. Nyeyiwaladon. Mungode, Inkpajule, Tali. Thank you for your time and enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, once again, one of the reasons why I probably forgot to announce that we had vote of thanks is because I knew she would leave out the MC. They always do that.
Thank you to our MC for today.
Thank you very much. And she also forgot to say baraka, which is thank you in my language. Okay, so Alhaji Abbas will give us a closing prayer right now. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim, Malik Yawmiddin. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. Thanks be to Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. Master of the day of judgment, thee alone do we worship and thine aid do we seek. Guide us on the straight path, the path of those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace upon them, not the path of those who had gone astray. O Allah, our cherisher, do not steer our hearts away after guiding us. Shower your mercy, strength, wisdom, and vision upon the directors, managers, and staff of GBC to uplift the image of the corporation to achieve its goal. Surely, Allah, you are the most gracious. Allah, the merciful. Allah, the keen. Allah, the holy. O Allah, the peace. Allah, the faithful. Allah, the seer of things. Allah, the most high. Rabbana taqabbal minna innaka anta samiul alim. Watub alayna ya maulana innaka anta tawabur rahim. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammad. Al-Fatihi lima ughliq. Wal-Khatimi lima sabak. Nasir al-Haqq bil-Haqq. Wal-Hadi ila suratika al-Mustaqim. Wa ala alihi haqq qadrihi. Wa miqdarihi al-Azim. Amin. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين آمين.
Thank you very much. And with the permission of the chairman, I'd like to thank you all for coming. And we hope that next time we extend the hand of invitation to you, you will come. And the Director General announced that we have an open day from tomorrow and then on Saturday. Okay, so we do invite it on Saturday. On Saturday, please make a date and don't be late. Thank you very much for coming.
This is 95.7 MHz Unique FM. We have just about 19 minutes and then we'll go for our evening news. So goodbye was a live coverage of our final lecture as part of our ongoing 80th anniversary here at GBC, live inside GTV Studio 1. Member speaker was Ambassador Cabre Play Amihere. So for now, so hit 6, bulletin, just enjoy the best, but not for it. R. Kelly's happy people, we're indeed happy here at GBC.